Good afternoon, and welcome to Lunch with Leaders. I'm so glad that you're here. Thanks for joining us. I'm Cindy Morgan, the Vice President of Learning and Organizational Development, and you're in for a great hour. So for anyone who's new to Lunch with Leaders, welcome. This is where leaders across Penn Medicine come together in community, and we can share with our fellow leaders some of the challenges that we face on a daily basis, as well as learn from some of the expert guests that we have on the show. In addition, we learn just as much through your participation in the chat as we do from our guests. So I encourage you to engage as much as you can, and everything that you put out there, you'll reap back as well. So calling all the super fans, I hope that you'll share the Lead Strong website so you could tell your friends to either join us live or watch this show or any past shows. I think there's a lot of stuff worth sharing. So again, thanks so much for joining us. Last time, if you missed our show 2 weeks ago, it was a good one worth rewatching. It was Mike Duncan, the CEO of Chester County, and Dana Band, an external expert in presentation skills, talking about mic drop worthy presentations. Thanks to Dr. Monica Sangavi for writing in. I totally agree that Mike, Dana, they shared so many gems, as well as each of you in the chat. We're actually going to post the chat because so many good comments and tips were shared that we'll be putting that on the Lead Strong website as well. The chat was on fire. So thank you for your active participation. As always, thanks to Gretchen for stoking up the chat. It's really what makes the show fun. So I got to ask you a question. How many of you went back and did some introspection and asked themselves, am I funny? Am I not funny? I had a couple people actually call me and they're like, Cindy, I'm not funny. So I'm going to stop trying to be funny, which I'm going to be honest with you, was kind of funny, but I didn't want to tell them that. I just was very supportive and said they were probably being too hard on themselves. But those comments were really poignant, and so many of you pointed that out in the comments. So thanks. If you've missed it, it's on the Lead Strong page. I think you'll really like it. The other thing I want to say is I know everyone is abuzz with the Friends reunion on HBO Max. I got an even better reunion. Last night was the first night in 15 months that I actually saw Youngin in person since we and the team, Jen Rader, Gretchen Kolb, we were just missing Casey, and Debbie Rosenbaum, our 30-minute coach expert. We got together and saw each other in person, and there was a lot of hugging and high-fiving. It was a great reunion. And we got to say hail and farewell to our own Debbie Rosenbaum, who is the original, she's the originator and host of the 30-minute coach that's run by PMA. She's moving to California with her family. So I just wanted to wish her well. Debbie, you will be missed, and you'll be an honorary PMA team member for life. Youngin, join me. It was so great to see you yesterday, and thanks for everything. We've got three quick commercials today, as well as the event code for the CME CE credits. Youngin, take it away.
It was great to see you, Cindy, yesterday, too, and the team. Just so grateful for everything now. Thank you for joining today. It's great to have you here. So first, a big shout out to our LGH colleagues for sharing the recording of the LG Health Experience Leader Meeting beginning of the month. The guest speaker was Dr. Amy Edmondson, who is a professor in leadership at Harvard and author of Fearless Organization. She talks about the concept of psychological safety, where people can speak up with ideas and questions and concerns, and oftentimes where mistakes are welcomed and valued. She's an excellent speaker, so please check it out. We also found some LinkedIn learning, so please check that out as well. June is National Employee Wellbeing Month. Big thanks to our benefits and wellness colleagues for putting this very thoughtful calendar together. I attended a session last week and it was packed with great practical tips. And I invite you to join in. There's something each day for everyone. And then lastly, tomorrow is the last day to register and order your book for the book club for June 30th. Once you register by tomorrow, you'll get a calendar invite and another email to order your book by Monday. We extended it so that you can register by tomorrow. So it's going to be a great session with Kevin and Adam Grant. So don't miss it. And our CME credit, please use the texting feature. Remember that you do need a profile to set that up. Go to the CME website, text in today's event code, which is 727-525-398-6728. It's open right now and will be for the next 24 hours. The event handout is on the LeadStrong website. For questions, reach out directly to the CME office. Hope you enjoy the show today. Thank you, and back to you, Cindy.
Thanks, Youngin. So let's talk about today. It's going to be really good. Many of you don't know this, but I was a competitive swimmer growing up from the time I could pretty much walk through high school. And this was long before Michael Phelps changed the sport. I spent hours at the pool and the gym, swimming back and forth and back and forth. And every 4 years, I'd get Olympic fever. And I'd watch these Olympians and what they were able to do, whether as individuals or in the team competitions. I always kept wondering, like, how do they keep pushing themselves further and further? And so over the past week, I'm definitely getting Olympic fever. Simone Biles, amazing new records. I was watching some swimming trials. And I was thinking about how their coaches get them to keep going as well. And after the year that we've all had, I keep wondering, maybe, and maybe you're wondering too, how do I keep going? How do I keep my team going? Because it feels like the marathon just keeps extending. So, and that's just when I think about us as individuals. When I think about great teams who dig down deep and find ways to win when it's unexpected. Okay, the Sixers notwithstanding, oh my gosh, what's happening there? Or those teams who just seem perpetually unbeatable. Athletic performance of individuals and teams, they have many parallels to what we're thinking about and what we're doing here in our roles as leaders every day. So today, we're going to explore this correlation from two Penn experts who were also outstanding athletes and on great teams, an Olympian and a collegiate football player. I don't know about you, but being on high-performance teams has changed my life, and I've been striving to create them everywhere I go ever since, and I'm sure you do too, so this show is for us. We love hearing from you, so please use the chat. I'll be asking you some questions. If you have questions for our moderator or for our guest, excuse me, we'll definitely try to pull them in as well. My first question is to you, though. I'd really like to know how you're doing. Let's do a quick check-in, so pull out your phones. You're going to text Penn Medicine 918 to 22333. If you have a challenge, just let G know in the chat. My question, as always, what emotions are you feeling today? Would love to hear from you. And while you're telling me how you're feeling today, it is my great pleasure to introduce you to our two esteemed colleagues and guests, Dr. Andrea Whelan, Associate Athletic Director for Sports Performance at the University of Pennsylvania, and Neil Ravitz, the Chief Administrative Officer of the Musculoskeletal and Rheumatology Service Line and the Chief Operating Officer of the Department of Orthopedics. Neil, Andrea, welcome. Let me just do a quick brag about you both. There's Andrea, 1996 Atlantic Olympic Games as the goaltender goalkeeper for the field hockey USA team. She marched in her hometown nonetheless. And there she is, tending goal. And there's our hero, Neil Ravitz, as the co-captain of the Army West Point football team, as an Army officer, and our hero. Neil, thanks for your service. Andrea, so happy to have you both here. So maybe we could see how everyone's feeling today. Excited, fantastic. Ooh, I love that. Plumped. Tired, excited, fantastic. Those are good words. Robotic, empowered, smiley face, calm, hopeful. Vacation coming. I love it. Refreshed, rejuvenated. Was it because you might have had some tequila last night also in addition to the PMA team? I know that that did it for me. Neil, do these words surprise you?
No, it's much like every day here at Penn, and I got to see people in person today, Cindy. I went to PCAM for an in-person meeting and sat with all the other COOs, and there's like fun and energy about seeing people again.
Did you hug? I need to know.
I did not hug Brian Furlong, but he and Fabian sat next to me, and it was good. It was fun.
That's awesome. So, Andrea, let me start with you. I'd love to hear a little bit about your career and journey and the interplay with athletics and how it shaped you both personally and as the leader that you subsequently continue to become?
Well, Cindy, let me just start by saying I'm really delighted to be here. You were a kind of person that I met immediately, felt instant resonance. So, you know, I really admire who you are and feel inspired by you. So I'm really glad to be on this with you and Neil today. So thank you for the invite. I would say that I feel like my whole life has been really shaped by athletics. I was born into a very high achieving family. My dad was a psychiatrist, studied at Penn Med and did his psychiatry residency here. Have two other uncles that did Penn Med as well. So that's a strong connection to Penn Med. And I started playing sports early, gymnastics and soccer, and then went on to play tennis as well growing up. So lots of sports, just, for, you know, our life was about sports in many ways, but also academics. And I, you know, went off to Iowa, played Division I field hockey there, played in Franklin Field against Penn, and then really created a career around athletics and high performance. In the Olympics, we had a concept called Team Around the Team, which is all the elements for holistic development, which is what we do here at Penn. So yeah, I feel like, you know, that's what I studied in my PhD. My MBA was focused on leadership and organizations and sports psychology emphasis in my counseling psychology degree. So yeah, I would say the interplay has been strong throughout my career.
If I could just brag about you and you could blush and it will be fine, but everyone, Andrea was a two-time first team All-American at Iowa. She just mentions it like, oh, I played for Iowa. No, she was like defining Iowa's team at the time. She was a finalist for the NCAA Woman of the Year Award. Her Iowa team was in the championship weekend for the NCAA, and they were runner-up 2 out of her 4 years, and she went every year on that team. She was inducted into the Iowa Athletics Hall of Fame. She also was an assistant coach at teams, including Maryland and Iowa, that went on to produce pretty amazing status as national champs and Big Ten titles and number 2 national rankings. So she's the real deal. So I had to just throw that in there, Andrew, because I knew that you were too modest to do it. Neil, how about your career and the interplay of athletics and how it shaped who you've become?
Yeah, absolutely. So I feel like similar to Andrea's family, I think my parents carted me around to sports for the better part of, middle school and high school, and always getting me to something. So if my parents were on today, I'd start by saying thanks for taking me all those places. But, you know, similarly, I think we also had a focus on academics. And so when I was starting to look at colleges, I was looking at Ivy League schools and all these places around the country to figure out what was the right fit for me, and ended up having an opportunity to go to West Point and be part of the football team there. And, you know, without some of the normal distractions of maybe a traditional college experience, the football team there, I think, really bonded around, our lack of college experience. And so all we had was football. And so we, you know, immersed ourselves in every aspect of training and eating together and working out together and playing and, had the opportunity to be the captain of the team as a senior, which was just a tremendous honor because I was an offensive lineman. I mean, you know, you can name any Super Bowl team for the last 10 years. Nobody can, nobody remembers an offensive lineman. Maybe Jason Kelsey, because
I was going to say Jason Kelsey is kind of memorable. Maybe in Kelsey, though.
Yeah, nobody else knows linemen. So, it was such an honor. And you know, when I think about my career since then, what I feel like I'm always trying to do is try and replicate the fun and high performance aspects of teams. I mean, the team that I've built here most recently in orthopedics and MSKR, you know, I feel like I'm trying to replicate those things because I love that team experience. I love the fact that, you know, you had different people, but we were all kind of working together and we were working towards goals. And so I find myself for the rest of my career trying to, you know, put that team back together again. And that's, I think, one of the challenges that all of us have as leaders.
I think I find myself doing that too. Neil, I'm going to brag about you. also, in addition to being on a great team of the Army football team, he was in the Army as well, another great high-performance team. Neil was deployed to Iraq in 2004 and 2005 as a part of Pennsylvania's Army National Guard. He was 3 months in Baghdad and then 9 months as a platoon leader and an executive officer for a 125-person battery in a different part of Iraq. So I just have to say thank you for your service. Neil also has been named a Veteran of Influence by the Philadelphia Business Journal and has received many accolades for his service of all kinds. So Neil, I got to shout you out on that. Let me ask the audience, any former athletes out there? If so, what sport and how did the experience shape you? Andrea, Neil, what's kind of cool is the two of you and your teams work together a little bit. Can you talk a little bit about how that partnership works?
Sure. Neil, would you like to start or would you like me to?
Sure. So, you know, our sports medicine program is based at the university. And so as much as we love to take care of patients from around the region and any of you who call me to help get you an appointment that day or the next day, really, one of our core missions is to support the athletes at the University of Pennsylvania. And so we have a facility located in Waitman Hall, which is attached to Franklin Field. Brian Sennett you know, takes care of the football team. James Carey takes care of the basketball team. And so we interlace all the time with the athletes. And from our perspective, it's just so great to see them coming back onto campus. We want them out there competing. But, you know, it's a core mission of the Department of Orthopedics to support Penn Athletics.
Yeah, and just to add to Neil's comments, I mean, Dr. Sennett is an icon in Penn Athletics. I mean, he is absolutely essential to the sports medicine connection and keeping our athletes healthy and helping them return to sport quickly. So we have such a close relationship with the ortho and sports medicine teams. And also it goes above and beyond. It's all of Penn Athletics. We have over 40 official medical consultants to Penn Athletics. And to be able to get our athletes in to see, you know, such great providers just in our backyard is just a huge differentiator for us in terms of, you know, other athletic programs in the country. To have that strong relationship with Penn Medicine is very much valued, not only by my sports performance providers who have really solid, great relationships with all the Penn Med physicians, but, you know, our student athletes and our parents feel safe knowing that our their children are in great hands.
Thanks. Just another great aspect of how the Penn community comes together. Andrea, I want to talk about teams. Before I do, though, I've got to shout out some folks. We've got all sorts of athletes here. Ultimate Frisbee, synchronized swimming, soccer and baseball, football, competitive dance, field hockey, lacrosse, dance, equestrian. Really cool. And there are a lot of things that athletics taught them. So, Andrea, let me go to you. Can you talk to me a little bit about teams? How do you define a high-performance team? Are there different types of teams, key characteristics of good teams? Maybe we can pull up the slide and you can talk us through how you look at this.
Sure. Well, let's talk a little bit about high-performing teams. I'm not sure I have a, you know, Webster Dictionary definition for you, but it really comes down to performing under pressure and there's something on the line. So, I mean, for Neil's teams, you know, the different branches of the armed forces, when they're going over, they're, I mean, those are mission critical teams that are, you know, pressure is definitely on the line and lives are on the line in those circumstances. So for sports teams, you know, what's on the line? Championships, notoriety, landing great recruits, but it's also the oftentimes it's the pressure of time, you know, time limited to win the game. So a couple of things, you know, in terms of understanding teams, there's all different types of teams out there and knowing what kind of team that you're on can really help with clarifying the roles and responsibilities and how your going to add value to that type of team. So understanding your skills, how you're going to contribute, and having role clarity. And that's where sometimes the teams that are not high performing do not have role clarity, even if they have the pressure. So what's common to all teams is really that common goal that we need to actually work together in order to achieve whatever mission is there. Because if the person can do it on their own, it's not not necessary to team.
Thanks. You mentioned pressure, and I think that impacts all of us. And boy, we've been living under some pressured conditions. Are there secrets to driving mental performance in both ourselves as leaders, as well as with individuals on our teams or our teams collectively? Andrea?
Driving performance. First of all, it's really what I talk about in terms of role clarity, knowing what that mission is and what your purpose is for coming together. Those are fundamental. And then also understanding the values, the different values that may be present individually, but also what are the values of the team that you're going to live by. And then when it comes to performance, what we teach in terms of mental skills to thrive under pressure, there's really four core skills that that can impact confidence and consistency. That's what makes up a high performing team, is both the confidence to say, yes, I know what I'm doing and I believe I can succeed in it, and then being consistent about it, not kind of a roller coaster ride all over the place. And so, goal setting, that's kind of the mission stuff, goal setting, being deliberate, knowing what your purpose is. There's different breathing. I could probably pause and take a breath now. That would slow me down. So just for the attendees out there, just notice where your breath is. Are you holding it, or are you kind of breathing deeply? Breath connects the mind and the body in immediate ways. And so mastering your breath can help you master your mind. Self-talk and body language is really critical. Oftentimes you can tell what people might be saying to themselves just by the way they're holding themselves. And it's really hard to feel depressed and down when your shoulders are back. And it's really hard to feel elated and excited when your shoulders are rolled forward. And finally, mental rehearsal is just like a highlight reel, seeing yourself being successful, training the brain, training the neural pathways for success. And then you can just allow the body and the skills to take over when the brain is clear about what it's doing and has rehearsed in the mind's eye.
Thank you, Andrea. I think these are really helpful. So thanks for sharing. Neil, let me turn it to you. Do those resonate for you? And you talked a lot about you, and like me, always trying to recreate an experience of a great high performance team. What are the things specifically that you've done as a leader to try to build those teams?
Well, I think to start, those points that Andrea brought up are exactly what I think many athletes, have learned through the years. Some of us through being self-taught, some from reading books. And I was fortunate enough to have a sports psychiatrist at West Point. And, he was the first one to put me in an egg chair and say, all right, don't think about anything else except for doing really well in the next game. You're like, wow, what if we just start to mentally prepare, for things like that? So, when I think about teams today and advice I would give to leaders about their individual performances, before a big meeting, trying to carve out 10 or 15 minutes to think, about how you're going to address things, how you're going to perform. For my teams, when we have big service line executive committee meetings, they know that there is a rhythm to how we prepare for those. And it doesn't just happen. You don't just show up on game day, as any athlete would know. So in some ways, that's what I try and do. It's trying to recreate that idea of practice and mental preparation so that when you're in front of those slides for the first time and you have Kevin watching or Casper or something, you don't want it to feel like, oh gosh, I don't know what I'm doing. You want it to feel like we've practiced this, we've rehearsed this, I'm like mentally tied into it, my phone's away, you know, all of those things so that you can perform your best. I think that's how I try and translate the two.
Thanks. I'm going to let everyone in on a little secret. I only wish that I didn't practice to make sure that I like hit my marks here on the show. I wish I were a natural. I'm not. I'm mentally rehearsing. I'm doing a lot of breathing, Andrea, you know, because I care. I want it to go well. So I like those tips. I've been using them myself. Let me go to the audience. Has anyone in the audience been on a high performance team? It could be of any area of your life. It could be here. It could be at a past job. It could be athletics or a different type of team. What was it like? And how did that influence, the actions that you've taken to build your own high performance teams? I'd love to hear some of your tips. Andrea, let me also go to you while I'm waiting for a couple of people to respond in the chat. What are the steps a coach and a leader can take to drive performance at both the individual and collective levels? How do you approach this within Penn Athletics? I know we've talked about your model, and I'd love for you to share that with our audience.
Sure. Yeah. So this is a model that just really can be effective with any type of team. And I do think it starts with the individual. I call it getting right with yourself first, is that if you're off kilter and you're entering a team environment, you can cause more chaos than, productivity. So I think, the fundamentals, I talked about the core four. I think sleep is really essential. That's a basic fundamental. Your good nutrition and exercise plan, emotional recovery plan, emotional regulation. So it really starts with the individual and developing the individual and having self-awareness there. And then when you plug yourself into the team is going to operate more effectively. So some of the team elements is understanding that there's a much bigger picture than just you and your role. I mean, I think there's a balance of selflessness and selfishness. You have to bring your best self to the team to help the team, but that also the team is going to be influencing you. So once you know how to team and you know how to follow others, then you have a chance to be an effective leader. So leadership and followership, the best leaders are great followers, and great followers make great leaders. So it is really creating that culture by design. I'm big on it, empowerment, helping people understand their strengths, gifts, and talents and how they contribute, and giving them an opportunity to express those fully, but also make sure, I think it was mentioned earlier about psychological safety, is that there is no such thing as failure, is that we're gonna learn from it and grow from it and make sure that that people have permission to make mistakes, and then we're going to learn and grow. So there is no failure if there's learning. And then ultimately, it's about taking that leadership to the community and understanding that your impact can have ripple effects when you grow other leaders as well.
Thanks. So many nuggets of wisdom there. I don't even know where to begin. I do think we could probably have a whole show on followership and the interplay of followership and leadership and how important that is. Let me tell you about a couple of the comments being added to the chat. There's some really great shout outs about what people have learned from their own high performance team. PCAM radiology, Colleen says it can be really stressful, and rehearsal works. Asking for feedback is critical. Lester, hi, my neighbor. Role modeling is important, and he's surrounded by high performers. Stephanie said that she's been on a high performance team with a leader that valued collaboration, listened to team members, and then acted on suggestions. There was a lot of recognition and people were valued, even if their ideas weren't used. So great ones there. Know thyself, work on weaknesses, and have good perseverance. Lester, you're on fire in the chat. Fail, first attempt at learning. Love that. Neil, your team is digging. You made up high performers, your team, different backgrounds and strengths. You really build teams where everyone brings a different perspective to the table and set a vision that everyone can follow cohesively. Great stuff. Andrea, in that last slide, you mentioned culture and being super important. I want to ask you, Neil, high performance seems more than fundamentals, and that culture piece that Andrea talked about is just really important. What do you do? I mean, some of your team members are shouting you out, but I'd like to hear kind of the recipe in your mind about establishing a strong culture for people and the overall team to excel.
Well, I think there's a couple things that come into play. And the first one that I'd point to is your role as the leader of the team. And, you know, not to overwhelm people, but I'll tell you, there's some pressure on you as the leader. And I had somebody at West Point who sat me down and talked to me about this really early when they said I was going to be captain of the team. And he wasn't trying to scare me, but he was trying to say that you have some responsibilities as the leader of the team. And, you know, you have to accept a little bit of pressure that people are watching you. And so if you want a certain behavior from your team, then you're going to have to model that. And that can be how you interact with others, how you collaborate, how you take different points of views, how you show up for a 6 a.m. meeting, even though that really is painful, you know, those types of things. So people are always watching you as a leader. And so the first thing I'd say about the culture is you have the ability to influence it and set it, and people will model that behavior. The second thing I'll say is sometimes you don't realize how good it is, how that culture is, because it's just a combination of all these little things, right? It's somebody working a little extra hard to get something done. It's somebody talking to a colleague and figuring out a solution and bringing it to you, and you're like, wow. And so sometimes I think we can even take for granted that we're part of a great team. And then you move on and you look back, 5 years later, you're like, wow, that was a really high functioning team. And so, you know, the second thing I'd say to the leaders, and whether you're part of the team or leading the team, is just think about all those little things. That's what makes up a great culture. And you'll look back and you'll say, wow, that was a really great team. That was one that was functioning, kicking butt, out there competing, doing their best. And then, you know, unfortunately, those things will come to an end and there'll be a different team. But that's how I think about the culture piece.
Thanks. Andrea, in your role, you oversee sports medicine, athletic training, strength and conditioning, nutrition, sports psychology, and mental health and wellness for our Penn University, 33 varsity programs, and over 1,000 collegiate student athletes. So you have a team of people yourself. Well, you know, sometimes it's easy to like teach this, and then sometimes it's hard to do. What are the specific things that you do with your team to be able to have a great culture?
Well, Neil made a lot of really, really great comments that I would echo. One of the things when I first got here 3 years ago is they asked me, you know, what are my expectations of the team? So first I said, you know, we have to know what we're doing, and we're about holistic student athlete development, having them have great experiences to win championships, because winning is fun. Everybody loves to win. But also to take all those skills to champion their lives and then help others. So we had a core mission that was really important. We discussed our values as well, in terms of growth and collaboration and character. So the expectations, setting those and then modeling the way. It's exactly what Neil said. If you're talking out of both sides of your mouth and you expect others to do things that you're not willing to do, that's going to cause what we call in psychology cognitive dissonance, which means that there's disconnect. It affects trust. So I think, you know, me living up to those expectations around fun and energy and respect and ethics, professionalism, high performance commitment to excellence, growth mindset, and continuous learning. If I'm modeling the way, then they're more willing to follow. So those are just some of the ways. We have a team around the team, so they can really use their skill sets to their highest and best. And I also want to clear the friction. Like, what is getting in the way, what I call unnecessary suffering? So my job is to create an environment where people can bring their best self to work, that they are given opportunities to recover, they give an opportunity to contribute to themselves and feel like a part of something bigger. So those are some of the elements of success.
Thank you. Carolina made a great point, which aligns with what you've said. Most people forget that the bigger the chair you sit in, the more responsibility and work. Boy, I think we're hearing that loud and clear. Neil, you're getting a lot of shout outs saying you really walk the talk. So that's really appreciated. Let me ask the audience, how do you maintain your own high performance culture on your teams? What are the secrets to your team's success through your own leadership actions? Are they similar to what you've heard from Neil and Andrea? Or do you have some different thoughts on it? Would love to hear from you. In the meantime, Neil, let me go back to you. In football, it's super easy. You put points on the board. There are wins. There are losses. How do you know now if your team's doing okay?
Yeah, it's one of the hardest things that I think you're transitioning from a clearly defined game, a championship, a win, and then how do you kind of do that over a longer period with the team? And so, you know, what I do, at least personally, is I like to set smaller games within the year. And anybody who knows me will know that I'm a very competitive person. And so it's shocking. So, you know, whether it's our finance goal within the department, that is, you know, that's a game for me because I want to, you know, not only beat my own goal, but I want to beat the other departments. You know, I'm a competitive person. And so we have to grow revenue. We've got to watch expenses. But, you know, that to me is competitiveness. And, you know, you can apply the same thing for any one of the targets that, you know, we have within Penn Medicine or within your organization. To me, it's about a competition. I, you know, want my team to feel like we're competing to win on that measure. And we're not going to win on all of them. Like, you know, my finance measure is not my greatest performance this year. But, you know, I want to, you know, be surrounded by people who also want to win, that want to have success. And so, you know, that's a way to kind of break up the year or a multiple year period into, you know, games that we're trying to win, trying to compete, trying to be the best at. And so that's how I try and translate it for myself.
Thank you. Andrea, same question. How do you, well, your team's a little different because you're really working with some of those more specific wins and losses. Are there other things that you do to know that your team's performing well?
Yeah, I really think a lot of it starts with how my sports performance providers are feeling about going to work and how they're doing personally. And professionally, whether they feel like they're growing in their job, their career, and personally. So I think that is a win, and how I would measure that is retention. Are they staying around? And also the attraction piece. If somebody, you know, goes to another place or has an opportunity to grow in their profession, the incoming folks, like they say, I really want to work here. I've heard great things, and they feel it when they're, you know, in the environment. So I think the team members are our fundamental wins. Others, you know, other measurable wins would be around, you know, reduction of injury as much as possible. You know, how long people are, out from injury would be a measure of success. I also think our relationships with our coaches, our student athletes are, you know, rating their experiences with our sports providers at high, you know, high ratings there and having great experiences, and attracting and retaining our student athletes that people want to come to Penn. They know that the sports performance is a huge part of their experience, and they want that experience. So those are some of the ways we measure. Okay.
So it sounds like you set up your own scorecards for excellence in terms of what you're looking at. Neil, let me ask you a question from Lisa George in the chat. A goal without a plan is just a wish. Competition is great, but wondering how high performance teams operationalize goals. Do you have a comment on that, Neil?
I think it goes back to the planning specifically. You know, when we go into a year, whether it's a finance goal, a quality goal, a reduction in cost goal, you know, what I always do is spend some time with the team and say, okay, well, let's talk through what are the actual things we're going to do. And that's where I think it transitions from being a hope strategy to a, okay, right, we're gonna put that new system in place. We're gonna hire somebody new to take care of that piece. Like, what are we going to do to actually influence that goal? And so that's our process we really kind of go through every year. We set out goals and then we talk about, all right, what are the things that we're going to do to actually influence that goal? And you know, sometimes we feel really good about those strategies, and sometimes we have our fingers crossed a little bit that it turns out well, but that's the process we go through.
So you trust the process? It's very Philadelphian of you.
Until last night, I trusted the process.
Being the process and not trusting the process. Andrea, what do you do if a team is struggling? What techniques have you used to turn teams around? Because not every team's high performance, let's be honest.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is the reflection piece. And, you know, with athletes, we talk about different types of routines. It's the pre, the during, and the post-performance routines. And I feel like a lot of where the magic is that people don't really leverage is in the post-performance reflection. You know, Neil maybe talks about after-action reviews. In the armed forces, they often talk about AARs. And perhaps some of the teams do that in Penn Med. So I think it's getting honest with yourself individually, starting with the self, and also getting honest with the team of what's kind of getting in the way, or what are we doing that's working. I think it's really important to start with what are we doing that's working, and that helps people get into a mindset that it's a safe place to then talk about some of the things that we could improve on, and then how we're going to improve. But, you know, Neil mentioned kind of some of the small wins, the baby steps, you know, understanding some mile markers to get some momentum. And I would say that one of the things that I've seen that doesn't work as well is forgetting to celebrate the small wins. So to be successful, you got to build some momentum or get that turnaround, and it's celebrating the small wins along the way and having that appreciation and gratitude for that, taking the lessons learned and moving forward.
Thanks. Chris Hutchinson, hi. The value of debriefing. I agree, Chris. I'd love to hear from our audience around what techniques they've found successful when dealing with a struggling team. And Neil, let me ask you that same question. Are there things you'd add to what Andrea said, or different strategies that you've employed with success?
Well, I think certainly the after action review concept is one that I really employ and I highly recommend to others. People on my team will know after an executive committee meeting that their phone's gonna ring sometime in the next 15 to 20 minutes. Some of it, I just need a sounding board, and some of it
is a little feedback.
Yeah. Let's talk about it. Hey, that went really well. Great job. Or boy, we didn't see that question come, and that one kind of stumbled on us. So I think we do those things actively. I think unfortunately, sometimes you also have to think about the people that are on the team. And if you really have a team that's struggling, you know, this is a challenge that any manager is going to have to face. If somebody's not right for the team, they can be a talented person, and maybe their talents, we're fortunate at Penn Medicine, we're a big place, there's lots of other things. And sometimes I've had to say to somebody, this is not, you know, who, this is not the best environment for you. Let's talk about where else, you know, you can be. You know, that's probably at the far end of the spectrum. I'd like to think, you know, feedback and coaching and, you know, feeling like, hey, you're a part of things that are much earlier on the spectrum. But the truth is that at some point, every leader is going to have to change out somebody on their team. If you've never been through that experience and you know, you need help, there's lots of people around here who have been through that. It can be difficult and painful. you'll get to the other side of it, as every leader on this phone has themselves. But I think about all of those things on a spectrum. That's how you take a team that's struggling to high performing.
Thanks. In addition to what the two of you just said so well, Lisa says data transparency, let the data tell the story. Taking the team out for fresh air, a walk or a meal, a little disguised team building. Thanks, Manoj. Lester says set very clear expectations and make sure all team members have the appropriate tools to succeed. Chris says try to help team members see each other's perspectives from the each other's shoes and really listening. Discussing the goal. Teams are not motivated if they don't understand the point or get too caught up in the tasks and not the goal. Thanks, Nathaniel. So earlier, Andrea, you mentioned recovery. You sort of just sprinkled it in there about what it means to add recovery to our overall performance. We've been in a time that's just been unrelenting as leaders here at Penn Medicine, as well as everyone kind of in the world. Can you talk more about how important recovery is to our performance and how we might build in more of it?
Yeah, this is really a missing link for a lot of high performers or people who are performers but don't view themselves as performers, but they actually are. And in the Olympics, when they looked back on reflection, the two biggest challenges that led to teams that were expected to be successful or athletes that were expected to be successful that weren't were nutrition and recovery. A lot of it came down to those two elements. And they can actually go hand in hand. As part of those post-performance routines, we talk to our athletes about rehydration, fueling to up their levels.
Wait, is that not pizza and beer? Is that not like wine and popcorn? That's not what you mean?
That is a way of winding down. Maybe over the long term, it could have some consequences that maybe not be of the highest and best. But so recovery, we think of recovery in a couple ways. One, kind of the general recovery around sleep, taking a mental break, kind of getting away from it, doing some of the things that you love to do, whether that's being with family, reading, activity, hobbies, sports, something that just feels good is really good for the physiology and the mind. But then there's also moments of recovery throughout the day where you can pause and even do 1 minute of mindfulness or of breath, to just take a minute and be where your feet are, as opposed to all the things that I have to do ahead of me or all the things that just happened that you're not really happy with. And then you bring all that sort of, if you think of a backpack and keep just putting rocks in your backpack and you don't release the rocks, you're going to have a pretty heavy load by the end of the day. So I think it's a number of strategies, and people have to figure out what individually feels good. But I think it has to do with, how you're fueling your body and then some of the mental as well as the actual physiology of sleep and naps and small breaks. Not just waiting for the 2 week big vacation and that's the only time you take a break.
Andrea, yeah. I feel like you're the channel, the messenger of the gods, if you will, with some of these to Neil, to our leadership population. So I think we got to take that in. Neil, got a final question for you. Morning routines can be kind of important for setting the right tone for the high performance day. And I'm not talking 6 a.m. meetings, but generally speaking, what's your morning routine and how do you set your day up for success?
I think a couple of things, and you always have to, I think, continue to try and tweak what works best. What worked for you in your 20s and 30s may not work for you in your 40s and 50s. So I think I'm always kind of tweaking mine, but when I know that I'm kind of at the top of my game, I generally try and get up, even if it's just 15, 20 minutes early, quick run, quick little lift, just something to kind of get going. Maybe one of the best pieces of advice that I rarely follow came from Sean Luby on my team, who once told me, like, the secret to success is not looking at your phone the first thing you do when you wake up. And yet I want to see who those 22 messages are from. I need to know. And yet, if you really kind of want to just start your day off right. You know, go exercise for 10, 15 minutes and don't pick up that phone yet. Then jump in the shower, get yourself ready, and then allow yourself to look at it. It's like the hardest thing to do. But I think
these
some
foods
of those
are like crack, aren't they? Like you can't.
Oh, they're horrible. They're horrible. I've also been turned on to black coffee now. And I feel like it's not sugary. It's like you are focused on caffeine and waking up right now. So you're going like pure black coffee. And so that's those are two things that are kind of in my morning routine right now.
Let me ask the audience, morning routines to set your day up for high performance. I'd love to hear from you. Andrea, in like 30 seconds or less, I'd love to hear a little bit about your morning routine for high performance too.
Well, I love the idea of exercising. I rode my bike this morning. It was a beautiful, beautiful morning. And I did sometimes listen to audios, meditation, that kind of thing. If I could do a cold immersion, like a cold shower to like really wake up, you wouldn't need coffee. But I haven't quite gotten consistent about that one, but I wish I did.
Oh, that guy is pretty good. With
Wim Hof.
Wim Hof, thank you. Yep. His technique is pretty interesting. I do like a couple of minutes of cold shower, like at the end of the shower. Like that's about as much as I can handle. Me and cold, we're not friends. Thank you for that as well. I just can't say thank you to the two of you enough. This is a topic that's near and dear to my heart. And I think for so many in the audience too, you've just been fantastic and generous in sharing your great insights and tips. And I just wanted to say thanks for coming on the show. Thanks for your great expertise. Thanks for your service. And I look forward to, Andrea, figuring out how Penn Medicine and all of us here on the line today can continue to support Penn Athletics. So maybe we can have you back in a future show and we can talk about how we build even greater community in the days ahead. So thank you both so much. I hope that the audience will join us on July 1st. We have an excellent set of shows for July. Let me preview what's coming up. So July 1, we're going to talk about creative problem solving. Roy Rosen, the Chief Innovation Officer from the Innovation Center, will be here with Dr. Sindhu Srinivas, who's from OBGYN. She's our Women's Health Service Line Leader. They are going to be fantastic. We've got a great lineup for the rest of July as well. We will have on July 15th, Dr. Mitch Schnall, the Chair of Radiology, and external expert Michelle Weitzman-Garcia talking about redefining high potentials. How do you work with high potentials now? Finally, rounding out July, at July 29th, we'll have 5 tips for stronger communications. Debbie Foster, our own internal communications guru, and COO from Home Care, Sarah Johnson. We may add a physician to that panel, so stay tuned as we continue to evolve the lineup, but do not miss any of the 3 shows in July. I just want to thank each of you for joining us today. Your participation in the chat, your insights, your generosity always make a tremendous difference to me and to everyone watching. I just want to say thank you so much for your service. I hope you'll find some time for recovery over the next 2 weeks until I see you again on July 1st. So thank you. We're so much stronger together in this community, and I'm so grateful to be a part of it. Thank